Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
No, I don't have a spinner. Well,
today, so I'll defer to Council President if she has anything that she wants to open us up with. If not, we'll get into the presentation.
I'll just say thank you to the library. You're always there for the people who need something, and in my council district, families who don't have other resources. So just thank you for being that other piece of the puzzle that addresses. I think you all deal with a lot of are experiencing homelessness. We've dealt with the migrant crisis just as much as all of us. Thank you for being a resource, always. Thank you. And my turn.
Great. And then we'll just do a quick round of introductions, if that's okay, if we start with you, Councilmember Gilmore.
Sure. Good morning, Stacey Gilmore, District 11.
Good morning, Darrell Watson, Fine, District 9.
Good morning, Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, one of your council members at large.
Eric Harity, your other at large.
Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver, District 11.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfecton.
Molly Urbina, Mayor's Operations.
Nicole Doheny, Chief Financial Officer.
Chantel Lewis, District 8.
Angela Casillas, Mayor's Legislative Director.
Good morning, Diana Romero Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Good morning, Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Flora Alvidres, Lucky District 7.
Justin Sykes, Budget Management Director for the City.
Stephanie Adams, Deputy CFO.
Thank you. So just opening today for members of the public and for council, I was just hoping to do a quick reminder of sort of the structure and partnership between the city and DPL. So the library is one of our independent agencies. And so what that means is the library really reports to an independent library commission. So city council approves the budget, and then that commission is really responsible for working with the library to really oversee the implementation of that budget and the resources. So as you'll see in the presentation today, the funding for the library is really a partnership between the general fund as well as the dedicated $2 dollars that were approved by voters a couple of years ago. And we also continue to support the library through CIP and bond investments on the capital side. Because of the independent nature of DPL, they just have a little bit more autonomy over resourcing and how they allocate resources. And so it's just a little bit of a different relationship than we have with some of the agencies that have come through. And so hopefully we can get through some of that in the questions today. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, Michelle.
And I'd like to welcome Council Torres to our meeting as well.
And my popcorn.
And your popcorn. Michelle, you're on.
Great. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here. I'm Michelle Jeske. I'm the city librarian and the executive director of the Denver Public Library. And I won't introduce everybody individually, but accompanying me today is our executive leadership team, our budget leadership team, our communications director. So I have support behind me, and I'm really proud of the work that collectively we're doing to steward this amazing institution. Excited to share with you today what we've been up to. So, we're in a moment of growth, you might be noticing, with the passage of ballot measure 2I, which resulted in the establishment of the DPL fund in 2022. With that additional investment over the last 20 months, not very long, we've been able to increase staffing levels for both frontline and critical internal services, increase hours of our branches citywide, address pay inequities system-wide, build and diversify our collection and reduce wait times, and improve the care of our buildings and our assets. And that's just a start. At the same time, as the community is growing and evolving and expectations for public services shift, we're working to clarify the role that DPL has in our community and really define the core services that we provide. This has been significant work that we've engaged in over the course of this year and is going to result in a new strategic roadmap that we'll deliver to our Library Commission in October for the years 2025 to 2030. We wanted to bring it up today because it's really what's behind how we manage our budget. So the core services are really the things that the library is uniquely positioned to do in service of the community. And for us, that's our collections, our materials and our information on a wide variety of topics in multiple formats and languages, our technology and internet access that allows people to connect and create, our spaces across Denver that provide easy access to services and resources, and of course our skilled staff that's trained in welcoming all, helping people use our resources, providing meaningful experiences, and facilitating connections. So we've developed a service philosophy that serves as a clear and consistent way to maintain alignment with our strategic goals and provide clarity on what we prioritize and how we do it. So as we round out our current strategic roadmap, we're continuing to be good stewards, enhancing access, and centering our community in how we provide services. And to just name a few things, this year we're completing interior refreshes and accessibility upgrades at four neighborhood branches, Woodbury, Bear Valley, Park Hill, and Virginia Village. Completing two major bond renovation projects at the Athmar Park and the Pauline Robinson branch locations. And of course, we've been letting folks know about the grand reopening of the Central Library on November 3rd. We hope you're as excited about it as we are. And at the same time, we're planning for a grand opening of a new library in Westwood, our Lena Archuleta Branch Library. And then lastly, we've been reimagining the library's customer feedback process to ensure concerns are rooted appropriately and addressed in a timely manner. We feel strongly that the priorities of the library align really well with the priorities of this city council. We know that the library plays a really unique role in the lives of Denver residents, and we've heard from them that we are their learning hub, a trusted source of information, a refuge from the elements, a place to explore, and so much more. DPL is unique in that the majority of our spaces and our staff are directly accessible to any Denver resident during open hours and even 24/7 through our online Ask Us chat. We're a primary and often underutilized channel for communicating with the community and hosting civic related events that draw neighbors into shared spaces for connection and collaboration. The library is considered a safe space with access to heating and cooling, restrooms, internet access, and supportive staff by individuals experiencing homelessness and housing instability. Of the more than 20,000 community resources contacts to date in 2024, 57% of those identified as experiencing homelessness. The library is a critical partner in ensuring these groups have access to the most relevant information and resources provided by the city and partners. You may know that DPL has a reference department equipped with a wealth of resources for small business owners, entrepreneurs, inventors, philanthropists, and everyday people exploring scholarship opportunities. We also prioritize access to the technology necessary to apply for, interview for, and even work remote jobs in this changing world. And we have skilled staff to support all of these services. Council's commitment to Denver's children, youth, and families is a natural place where the library thrives, with services, spaces, materials, and even technology for every age. There's nobody that walks through our doors who can't find something for them. The library also provides premier programming for our youngest and our aging Denverites, focusing on the topics, skills, and resources most important to them and their caregivers. And of course, we partner with many city agencies and other organizations to provide space for their work or co-create programs and services together to meet Denver's needs. Nicole touched on this. There is definitely a connection with the city beyond the budget. The mayor does appoint our library. All right. So to go into a little more depth on our core services, we'll start with collections. We believe that access to our collections gives our residents the agency, freedom, and information to explore whatever interests them. And when we ask our customers what the library means to them, we hear things like a reading oasis or a learning hub. Our collection is by far our most well-known and loved service. Cardholders can access materials on multiple devices and in multiple formats, from books to magazines to audiobooks to DVDs and everything in between. And surprising to some folks, we know that our cardholders continue to prefer physical materials over electronic. In 2024, we've circulated nearly 3 million items to date and are seeing more items checked out per day than last year. And we know that as we reopen Central and other locations, those numbers are going to continue to grow. We're also seeing continued growth in the programs and services centered on our collection, our story times, our phone a story use, our book clubs, and other offerings. Access to the collection is our top priority, and our staff continues to innovate ways to connect individuals to materials through growing our world languages, diversity audits of our collection, and programs that reduce or even eliminate the wait times. Next up is technology and internet access. While technology may seem omnipresent to some, we still have residents in our community with limited access to either a reliable device or the internet to make that device useful to them. Our customers rely on our technology to connect them to the world around them, both for entertainment, which is important, and for engaging in everyday necessities, like applying for a job, banking, applying for public services, getting school and work done, and staying connected to loved ones. When asked what library technology does for them, our customers say that free and fast Wi-Fi, free public printing and copying, and access to a computer have a major impact on their day-to-day lives. You can see that we continue to see high utilization of our technology. In 2023, we had 285,000 unique computer sessions, averaging 824 a day. And the use continues to grow. In 2024, we have, so far this year, 207,000 unique sessions and a daily average up to 845. And that, again, is without the Central Library being fully reopened. So we'll continue to see those numbers trend up as well. A lot of people use the library for Wi-Fi. We're tracking close to 900,000 unique logins to date this year. And of course, our circulating technology, which consists primarily of Chromebooks and hotspots, continues to be a hot commodity for our customers on the other side of the digital divide. We currently have about 2,000 items in the circulating collection that can be checked out for 3 months at a time, and we see high demand. They're almost always in use with the wait list. And of course, the library also offers access to creative technologies through media labs or maker spaces. So far this year, in the 5 labs that are open now, we've seen about 32,000 visitors. And again, we'll be adding the original Idea Lab at Central back into the mix in a month. All right, spaces. The public library is one of the last free public spaces in a community where a person can just be. If you think about it, there just aren't that many places, especially inside, where that exists. And when we ask our community what these spaces make possible for them, we hear things like a hangout spot or a place for family time. People note really appreciating the increased hours of availability. We are focused on ensuring that our public spaces are comfortable and welcoming, and that means prioritizing caring for our historic assets while thinking about how to enhance the customer experience inside our spaces. A prime example of this is the exciting grand reopening of the Central Library, where visitors are going to find a completely transformed physical space on the first 2 floors primarily, with many free, and some of you have been over to see them, beautiful new meeting, study, and community spaces. There's also a new large programming space that will be used by the library, the community, and hopefully you, and a new team library, and much, much more. This also means identifying opportunities for meaningful growth and expansion. Early next year, as I mentioned, we will open the new Lena Archuleta Branch Library in the Westwood neighborhood. That will be our 28th location. And we will be able to provide that neighborhood with lots more books, lots more technology, community meeting spaces, and a wide variety of services in a co-created space with other mission-aligned organizations. So looking very much forward to that. And then lastly, the people who make the magic happen, our skilled staff. The individuals who work for the Denver Public Library are our biggest asset. They're passionate and they're committed to serving Denver. They are what make our core services possible. The resources I mentioned in the previous slides are really important, but having a supportive individual to help customers navigate resources, explore information, learn new skills, participate in meaningful experiences, and connect with their community is what makes the library accessible, welcoming, and a good use of public resources. When we ask our customers what working with library staff makes possible for them, we hear things like providing peace of mind, knowing that knowledgeable and helpful folks are there for me and my friends and my neighbors. DPL staff are highly engaged and really see the connection between their daily work and the library's mission. The together in our mission really resonates with them. And we realize that to continue to maintain, build, and enhance our organizational culture, we have to continue to seek ways to support continuous learning and development. So this year, our primary focuses to support staff are equipping them with the tools, skills, and confidence to verbally de-escalate disruptive situations in library spaces by training an additional 300 customer-facing staff in the Crisis Prevention Institute's verbal interventions model. That's a mouthful. Building stronger, more supportive relationships with youth by expanding the stand-up staff training series, which facilitates a shift from controlling negative behaviors to inspiring positive ones and amplifying youth voice. Another example is launching a reimagined volunteer program focused on aligning individuals seeking service opportunities with one-time, short-term, or recurring ways to give back and support library branches. Equity is not just a buzzword for the library, it's truly at the heart of what we do and where and how we do our work. Challenging inequity is written into the library's strategic roadmap, which emphasizes removing barriers to accessing library spaces and services, assuring that investments are reflective of the Denver community, and targeting services in neighborhoods with the most need for access and support. As we finalize our 2025 to 2030 strategic plan, you will continue to see a deep focus on the importance of library spaces, collections, technology, and staff support, and the role those resources play in the lives of all Denver residents. We'll also continue to demonstrate an unwavering commitment to equitable access to those core services, leveraging data and partnerships to determine how to most meaningfully place resources throughout the city. Pause there before we get into the numbers. So the recommended 2025 budget for the library is $61.1 million from the general fund, with $30.2 million from the DPL fund, and $1.4 million coming from the Denver Public Library Special Trust Fund. Not included in the chart is about $205,000 from state and federal grant funding, and a $7.6 million transfer to capital from the DPL fund. Looking at this slide, we're showing here personnel accounts for 81% of our total base budget for the library. And that on this slide, the FTE in the general fund is flat between 2024 and 2025. The decrease you see here is due to the 7.5% overall reduction from the original budget. And this, of course, includes 4% merit increase like other agencies and salary adjustments for library personnel made in 2023. Okay, so looking at the DPL fund, the 2024 operating includes the original budget plus unspent budget from prior years. That includes a carry forward from 2024 of $3.2 million, operating reserve of $5.7 million and designated reserves of $6.1 million to purchase a fleet and facilities warehouse and yard. I think it's important to note that with our Library Commission, we've established fiscal policies regarding carry forward and the creation and administration of the reserved and unreserved cash and investments within the DPL fund. The Library was asked to prepare a $3.3 million reduction to help produce a balanced budget. To reach that, we plan to achieve $2.8 million by maintaining a vacancy count of just over 36 FTE, equating to $126,000 per payroll for 22 pay periods in FY25. And we were gonna do that through two strategies: freeze 29 FTE that are not in active recruitment and expand recruiting timelines. Important to note that 60% of these positions are customer facing, so naturally a result in service impacts there, including the number of programs that we can offer to the public as an example. 40% of those being internal service positions, so that could result in reduced cleaning schedules, fewer security walkthroughs, and things of that nature. It's also important to note that the positions that are being held this year are to help with this year's vacancy savings and reduction for FY24, but also were planned so that we could add hours at branches at the right time to plan for the grand reopening of Central and hire appropriately at the right time. And we've been restructuring. So they were planned vacancies and kind of a controlled rollout of hiring. Continuing to hold these, of course, does impact access to services, but we remain focused on providing the best experience for our customers. The remaining planned $500,000 reduction would come from a reduction in supplies and services across the organization. Again, that could result in reduced investment in collections, programming, training, deferred maintenance, upgrades. Again, we'll try very hard to mitigate any impacts to our public. And then to meet the proposed ultimate budget, we have another $1.7 million to solve for, and we are committed to working with our budget friends and the Library Commission to do that. That's due to the additional reduction of a net 3% in our personnel budget. All right. As a heavy direct service agency, personnel reductions are necessarily going to result in service impacts. There's no way around that. As stated already, the Library is committed to minimizing customer and staff impacts. High priority services and supplies will take precedence when managing our resources, even as the Library scales lower priority programming and maintenance. That service alignment tool I mentioned earlier is one way that we can do that. Specifically, we're going to work to both minimize current employee impacts and take into consideration the future needs of the organization. We'll do that by holding some existing vacant positions for all of 2025 and extend recruiting timelines. And positions will be refilled based on an internal criteria score to mitigate high impact to staff. In services and supplies, of course, with decreased revenue and increased costs, this is something all agencies are going to have to face. We will prioritize the services and supplies when thinking about applying those resources. With capital, we'll be looking at other creative funding sources to address the gaps with CIP and other city funding. That'll include working with our excellent grants team to seek sources through the federal and state governments, and then we will be working, as always, in partnership with our Friends Foundation to do private and public fundraising. Getting close here. We requested $7.6 million from CIP that was not approved. The original proposal we put forward was to include a matching of $7.6 million from the DPL fund for necessary and urgent capital improvements. Not receiving these funds will certainly impact our ability to keep libraries open during times of extreme weather. The anticipated projects included HVAC upgrades at five branch locations, fire alarm upgrades at 5 locations and helping fill bond gaps at 4 locations. Last slide. And we thought we would include this because we get a lot of questions in only the second year of the implementation of the DPL fund. So we thought we would share more about its allocated uses. And I've shared with most of you individually in my one-on-ones that we are creating a story map about the DPL fund so that we can show how we're investing at both the city level and the neighborhood level. And we'll be rolling that out here after a while. So for the 2025 tax season, the anticipated allocation of the DPL fund is 61% in personnel, 19% in supplies and services, and 20% in capital projects. And these, I won't go through them all, but this is a list of some of the ways that this fund has been and will continue to be used. We've hired the entire staff that will support teens in the new teen library through this fund. Last year, we took the Plaza staff into the DPL fund. That's the team that supports immigrants and refugees in our community. We'll anticipate needing to do that again for our important digital navigator team. So those are some of the ways that personnel are helping the city through the DPL fund. In supplies and services, we've been able to, as I mentioned, really expand and diversify our collection and reduce wait times. We've been able to do significant investment in our special collections areas. And then we are spending a lot of the resources on deferred maintenance, things like vehicles, conditional assessments, IT server upgrades, and things like that. So basic operations is how this fund is being used. I'll just end that I think our infrastructure challenges as a city are pretty significant, and the library is certainly not immune to that. We have a trend of unplanned closures that is quite concerning to us. We've had 60 unplanned closures of branch libraries to date, year to date this year, compared to 38 in 2022 and 24 in 2023. If we don't meet these infrastructure and capital challenges, this trend is just going to continue, and it's at the same time that libraries are, and they should be, heating and cooling centers. And this is mostly due to system failures, particularly HVAC and sewer lines. I'll give you an example of the Montbello Branch Library. During that super hot week this year, it was closed every single day because we were not able to keep the temperature in that building at a safe and comfortable level for our staff or our community. And at that same location, we now are jetting the sewer line on a weekly basis to get us through until we have a planned fix for that sewer line using the DPL fund in the spring of next year, but we're not sure it's gonna hold. So that's diverting a lot of attention and time from our maintenance staff that's taking away from things that they could be doing at our other facilities. So we are really looking forward to partnering with all of you, our city colleagues, on helping figure out how we mitigate these risks going forward with a deep set of capital challenges at the library. With that, I will open it up to questions.
Councilman Flynn to the meeting, and also he's the first person in the queue. So
I'm first.
You're first.
Michelle, first a clarification on the budget spreadsheet, 870 FTE, you're holding 36 open. Is that 36 from the 870 or above the 870?
From.
So there are 870 FTE working, the 36 positions above it. Are in excess of it?
If you don't mind.
Yeah, so
Hi, Gina Dunn. I am the budget director for the library. So I believe what you're asking is easily explained in that we have that 800, and I don't have my exact number on my head, but we have that amount they are not all full at this point in time because we are still actively recruiting in lots of different spaces. And we have purposely kept some set aside knowing and preparing for this reduction.
For the full year,
correct.
And
so we already currently have those FTE. We're holding them vacant in anticipation of the reduction.
Okay, thank you. And then, Michelle, what are the criteria for determining the difference on your mitigating impacts in 2025? What are the criteria for determining the difference between a low priority versus a high priority deferred maintenance item? I just heard you talk about Montbello Library, for example. But is there a bright line? Do you know what the criteria are? Not only for deferred maintenance, but also for programming and services.
So we look at equity, and then we're, as I mentioned, really doubling down on this notion of the core services. What is the library uniquely equipped to provide that fits within our mission? And that is our collections, our technology, our spaces, and the staff that support individuals in the use of those. We have been going through an exercise to identify and define our lines of service. We've created this service philosophy and a service alignment tool that we will be using to go through every line of service and figure out what most aligns with where we think we should be spending our resources and what doesn't align as much. So we're starting there, and then we will be using that tool to look at every new possible thing that we might do. I think on the deferred maintenance side, it's life safety first, of course, always. But we also did commit to the voters who passed 2I that we would keep our spaces fresh. So, you know, finding the balance between making sure that we can open Montbello because the toilet flushes and the temperature is below 80 degrees, but also that we have carpets that haven't been replaced in 30 years. So those are some of the things that we look at when we're making those decisions.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to see a priority on further extending hours. There are two libraries in my district that have community rooms that generally are unavailable in the evening because of not being open at many of the evenings, and the demand is so high that they're booked. And we can never get in there.
Very much.
I'm not saying we can never get in there. Harvey Park will meet in there, for example, but there's more need for space than we have evenings available. So I'd love to see an emphasis on extended hours. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Up next, we have Councilwoman Alvidres, followed by Councilwoman Torres.
Thank you, Committee Chair. And thank you for being here. So great to see the library staff here. I'm really excited and grateful for the work that you've been doing. Excited for AFMAR to open up. I know the whole community is really excited seeing that construction happen. So one of my questions is just, looking through the budget book, and I don't have it with me, but when I was looking through it, I noticed there was no statistics on the Plaza program. I'm happy to see it listed on your list. Do you expect it to continue in 2025, and what kind of spending is expected there?
I don't have the dollars in front of me, but we did ask for funding, general fund funding this year for the Plaza staff. We are now paying for the Plaza staff, and I probably everything out of the general fund, or out of the DPO fund. I'm sorry, I don't know what the figures are, but we've maintained that program. I think with the increased hours that we've been able to add in evenings in particular, that the numbers have been going up in terms of use. And I think to go to Councilman Flynn's question and recommendation, that is a great example of how we've decided to expand hours to make sure that the communities that really need that service can get there. And I don't disagree that with one of our core services being our spaces, that providing access to community groups, RNOs, council members should be a priority. It's a great partnership. We have the space, we have the audience, and others come in and use that.
That's great to hear. I was actually at the AFMAR Rec Center and saw that the program was operating there, so that was, I'm really grateful for that. Something that has come up around the internet issue is, you know, misinformation around like people using this for criminal activity or for parties at the library after hours. And so I know I was told that I would get some data on how many people are using it overnight, and I don't think I've gotten that, but if I could get that, that would be really helpful just to kind of dissuade that narrative that's going around.
I I appreciate that. We'll definitely get you that information. It's really important to us that we provide 24/7 Wi-Fi access because there are a lot of people who do not have that at home. And our hours are only, you know, available certain amounts of day. So outside use is a good way to help with digital inclusion.
Absolutely.
Thank
you
for your support.
Yeah. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Councilwoman Torres, followed by Councilwoman Zoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Michelle. I am so thrilled about Lena, about the Leonard Gillette branch. And just want to thank your team and Erica and the commissioners and folks who served on that committee, because it was so gratifying to come out of that with her name, knowing her legacy and experience in West Denver. So thank you so much. And for my colleagues, this was a bond-funded project from the 2021 bond, but built in a really innovative way and in partnership with another development that's going in. And so it'll also be built much faster than if we were taking it on our own, is my estimation, because Westwood Rec Center still hasn't broken ground, right? And that was a 2017 bond project. So will we see it open this year, next year?
I believe early next year is what we're hoping for.
Okay, great. So thank you for that. Question about 2I, kind of a two-part. One is, how do you determine what you request in expansion from the general fund now that you have 2I? And then two, what the very first request or permitted use of 2I was to bring library staff and librarians who are below market pay to above market pay, and just want to know what the progress is on that. I pulled up the old presentation, and there was an anticipated $4.5 million that was supposed to go toward personnel, so just want to check on the status of that.
Start with that and then work my way back. And thank you for your partnership on naming the new branch library and your upcoming partnership on renaming the Barnum Library. So I believe that to date we've spent close to $7 million on adjusting staff pay. We've done that in a number of cycles now. We partnered with the Office of Human Resources to determine a formula and a methodology in partnership with our HR team and our strategy evaluation team to look at every individual's work experience and then figure out where they actually should be within the pay range. Even though we are independent, we are still bound by comp and class practices of the library per the city charter. So that partnership's been great. We would never have been able to make that change without the DPL fund. We did not have the personnel budget. I think this is another great example of how we've been able to bring the DPL fund to bear in a way that helps us be more sustainable. So we were able to add a senior comp and class analyst to our HR team so that we can stay on top of this. So hopefully that helps you with. And I think we're at about 76% of eligible staff received pay increases because of this work. And it's not insignificant. We had some of the lower paid staff get as much as a 40% pay increase. Now I already forgot your other question, I'm sorry.
How do you determine what you go after in terms of general fund requests?
So I think that's gonna be an ongoing conversation that we're gonna need to have. We, of course, in the ordinance and ballot language, it says that the DPL fund is not meant to supplant the general fund. The community task force that worked so hard with us to get this thing on the ballot and then get it over the finish line felt very strongly that the city needs to continue to fund the library as it does other agencies. So we're only in year two. So last year we felt strongly that we should bring the Plaza program forward because we had been advocating for a long time grant and privately funded program that so aligns with actually Mayor Hancock's and Mayor Johnston's vision and all of you, that it made sense to us that it belonged in the general fund. So that was the reasoning for bringing that forward last year. In the same way, we weren't.
That's like 7 years in the making.
Thank you. And really a very important service. And then somewhat similarly this year, you know, because of the budget challenge that the city is facing, and we totally understand, the there wasn't the ability to come forward with a lot of expansions. And so we did ask for a continued funding from the city for the Digital Navigator program. And the reason we brought that forward is that, again, we had been advocating for that over the last couple of years to get it off of the ARPA funding and into the city's general fund. So those are how we've made the decisions to date. But I think it's, you know, I talked to Nicole yesterday, I've been talking to Stephanie and Justin. We have some work to do to kind of figure out how we partner to make sure that we have a world-class library through the city's support and this other fund that we worked hard to get.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Councilwoman Sawyer, followed by Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. First, I would like to point out I have my nails painted red for the black and white and red all over ball on Saturday. Looking forward to it. And I want to say thank you for the amount of work that you all have done to try and figure out how to integrate the 2i funds into you know, what you're doing. So really appreciate, I know that that's a heavy lift. I do have a question about it. You said earlier in your presentation that you had made a request for capital dollars that was not granted. Was that request from general city capital dollars, or was that from 2i capital dollars?
We asked for $7.6 million in CIP funding.
Okay. And so were you able to, that was denied, correct? Okay. So were you able to take 2i dollars to make up that difference, or no?
So right now we are fully allocated in our plans for the DPL fund. We took our 2025 budget proposal to our Library Commission in June as we were submitting to the city. So we need to go back to them now in October, actually, and our December meetings, and have further conversations about what we're going to do in 2025. I don't see us spending $15 million. That is not, we don't have room for that in the DPL fund on these proposals. We have allocated, and we would transfer $7.6 million in the DPL fund to do some of the work that we've proposed.
Okay, appreciate that. So Schlesman is one of the libraries. It is a bond project. The project scope has been reduced significantly due to the cost of overages. I know that there's a fundraising effort to help raise those funds from community. We sent the link out to 25,000 residents of District 5 in September. But I think it is, I guess I am concerned, and I think this is a flag for our Department of Finance too, in these conversations that you all are having around how the 2i funds are dovetailing with the city's general funding capital fund dollars. I appreciate that that's a difficult conversation, but the 2i funds were very, very clear to the voters that they were not supplanting the city's investment in our libraries. And I think the Schlesman situation is a really good example of where the 2i funds were then expected to supplant the city's investment in those dollars in that library. So that's a real concern. And like I said, we're doing our part to try and help fill the $600,000 gap for that library project by sending out the fundraising link to 25,000 households in District 5. It's not enough. It's not going to be enough. So I would appreciate if, as those conversations continue to move forward, and I understand we're $40 million over budget this year, so probably not going to happen this year. But I do think that that is a real conflict that needs to be resolved as we move forward. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I was just told that Channel 8 went down, and so I apologize. I was a bit distracted there. Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez, and then Councilmember Gilmore up next.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Michelle, for being here. And
First, I just want to say thank you for everything that the library does and all the services that are provided the staff. I think I've said it on, like, you know, one-on-ones and calls that we've had, but I just want to, like, publicly thank you for everything that you do and how you continue to navigate anything that is thrown your way, honestly. You know, whether it's the trauma-informed trainings and things that you do for your staff to make sure that they are equipped with the things that they need to be able to handle things, anything that comes through the door. So really appreciate all the intention behind of that. So my question is kind of going back to a little bit of what Councilwoman Sawyer was asking about was the denial for the CIP funds for the $7.6 million. Just kind of curious, and this might be a Department of Finance question, just curious, you know, if the denial was purely from a budgetary standpoint and why none of it is able to be funded. And then the second part of the question is, because a lot of that impacts the because of the HVAC issues, right? So, like, cooling centers. And my understanding is that the library partners with the city to provide those spaces. But how are we, like, how does that being reconciled if we're not able to assist so that the library can provide those types of services that are in partnership with the city?
I'm sorry, before you answer that question. No. Can we just pause for a moment because Channel 8 is down and there's a bunch of folks who are watching along and I don't want them to miss the questions anymore.
Okay. Pause. Yeah, perfect time to open up one of those loud snacks.
Yeah. There you go.
Here's
one
here.
Sounds like it's time for snickers. Where's Beth? Beth, thank you.
You got a book we can read?
I have many books you can read that are more interesting.
That's a low bar.
You should let us help you. Read
good, good. How are you?
Supposed to be very serious.
That was short. Back up.
Pretty appropriate.
Okay.
I hope you tell us a story.
Open all your chips.
Sorry. Story time.
We are still live online.
Oh,
don't go too crazy.
I'm assuming.
Okay. So sorry, we just wanted to pause to make sure you all had access to the live stream. So Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Thank you. Yes. So yeah, my question is just about the denial of the $7.6 billion and those capital improvement projects, and knowing that the city has this partnership with the libraries around the cooling centers and how that is helpful to residents of our city that need those types of services. And I know it's like a very basic kind of human need, right? But it is so essential. And so I'm just curious kind of what was the thought there and how that played out. And I don't know if it's a Department of Finance question or an administration question.
Yeah. Sure, so I think, you know, it's not really in our practice to discuss the specifics of sort of the deliberative process that we went through, but what I can say is our capital team, and I think Jackson's here, and other folks are on the phone, really works very closely with Michelle and her team to talk through all of their needs. And so we actively support them around expansions and bringing on new facilities, important upgrades at existing facilities, as well as really the maintenance needs. And so I think we like to think we collaborate very, very closely across the whole portfolio, recognizing, you know, there very frequently are more needs than there are resources, and we really try to listen to the library around prioritizing those investments and what really should be coming first, and I think we're very committed to that partnership. I think there's some great examples of this year where we were able to put together capital stacks to complete some projects or get some projects over the line that I think we're really proud of, and so look forward to continuing to really work closely with them to make sure we can address as many of these needs as possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Councilwoman Gilmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Michelle, for all the work that you and your team do, and especially the folks who are out in the community at the branch libraries. And so my first question is, how did the $941,000 mid-year reductions this year affect the library operations? Did you have position vacancies that you didn't hire mid-year because of those reductions, and you're shaking your head yes, so I won't ask you to run through that data right now. I'll just submit this question to Angela and Tim, and hopefully we can get that data of how many positions maybe didn't get hired because of this year's mid-year reductions, seeing that you're going to have, about 41 positions held, vacant positions held, I'm really, really concerned about, one, what you brought up about Montbello's library, and I will keep it brief because the Montbello library is actually in Councilwoman Lewis's district, but I've been a 35-year member of the Montbello community, and the Montbello Library is a historic social justice issue. And when we see in a presentation a slide around equity, and I know you all are doing everything that you can to make sure we're getting those resources, but we have never had the resources that we need. And quite frankly, I'd like to understand from the administration side, and we don't need to go back and forth here, but I'm really concerned in when we're investing possibly millions of dollars in police network investigations at 47th and Albrook because of domestic violence that is happening in the villages at Gateway, and yet we as a city are okay from a value-based financial decision to say, hell with Montbello Library. You don't need a working sewer system and you don't need HVAC when we know all the data points to on the map that was just handed out, thank you so much, that this community has historically never had what we needed, and I cannot believe in 2024, even with all of the budget issues that we're having right now, you're gonna fuck over Montbello. And I'm just gonna say it, because I only have two more years in this space, and I hope the media picks this up. Because I don't know what the cost, and that's going to be one of my follow-up questions, Michelle, is how much is the HVAC improvements? How much is the carpet replacements? How many staff do you need to staff that library? Because long story short, at the Comfort Inn at I-70 in Peoria since October of 2022, there have been brand new neighbors, our new immigrant community in our city, in the front side of Montbello. So you know where all those folks went? They went to go live at the villages at Gateway, because it's in walking distance. And we've been talking about P&I, because hell yeah, there's a bigger violence rate up there. People can't pay their rent. They are not legal in our city. They can't feed themselves. They're begging on the street. And I appreciate the partnership with Councilman Lewis's district and her staff, because I was out there with Tiffany holding a 9-month-old little baby, pushing a stroller so mom and dad could get free clothing and shoes in our city. Like, what we have gone through is massive, but my question to the administration is, we just found out Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez asked the really real question of where the Denver Asylum Seeker Program is going. We were told at City Council that it's not going to be in the same iteration that it is today going into 2025. I don't know what that looks like, but that means from what Victoria told us that night, Councilwoman Torres and I talked to her after, they're estimating we've got about 12,000 new neighbors, new community members in the city and county of Denver. So if we have 12,000 new people, my venture in the city and county of Denver is we've got a lot on the west side, a lot on the north side, a lot on the south side, and a lot in far northeast Denver. And we need to... I will stop there. I will submit my questions.
Question. You're good.
but I just want to know then, what is the investment going to be if we're keeping 40 positions vacant with the library, because that's where people are going to go in Montbello to get services. They're gonna walk to the library and need to access computers, access workforce development. They're gonna need to utilize that library. And so I'd like to find out from the administration, what is the community supports then that are going to be put into the Montbello Library, so we're just not leaving our new neighbors with zero supports if we're winding down the Denver Asylum Seeker Program. How are you going to build up then the Montbello Library to make sure that folks are being served? And we don't need to get into that right now. I'll submit it and we'll get it in writing and be able to do that. My last question, Michelle, and thank you, Madam Chair, for just a little bit of 35 years of history in the neighborhood. My last question is, I'd love to know what the demographics, Michelle, of the 31 almost percent of library cards that we're seeing actively utilized. I wanna see like youth and elders, you know, where we're having the highest utilization, because I believe that our numbers in Montbello and Green Valley Ranch alone of use will rise to the top, hopefully, these investments. And so thank you so much for all you and your team, and especially the frontline community folks. I'm worried that you're gonna have a huge drop off of employees and you're gonna have a difficulty with retention, because the jobs are very hard out in the community because people are really struggling. And that really concerns me, where you might not have enough staff to help each other and to support each other. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Feel free to answer that, but I just wanted to just take a moment and pause and just remind us of decorum. And I don't want to Robert's rules anyone's down, because, you know, that's not, it's a headache, but I just want to make sure that we are having a conversation and we're respecting each other in this space, so that we can get the information that we need. With that, I can give you the floor to answer the question, or I can go to Councilwoman Romero Campbell for her questions as well.
I think most of the questions were for others. We will get you those numbers.
Thank you.
And thank you for your support and your passion. We love Montbello.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Michelle. Pro Tem?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I so appreciate all the work that the library is doing. I think we talk about Hampton Heights Library is just very small but mighty. And in that queue for the Elevate bond for those renovations. For those who are watching on Channel 8, because I think we're now back online, but for those who are watching and monitoring where we are, can you just speak a little bit to where they can see where those renovations are in the budget? I know it's under the bond, but where they can see it in the budget, not only for Hampton Heights, U Hills, and maybe just speak to the timeline for that.
So University Hills is part of the Elevate Denver bond program, and we are in process to make a selection using the CMGC methodology for that library and three others. So we're being good stewards in partnership with city agencies to try to use those dollars in the best way possible. So that's where we are with University Hills. We will probably need to bring some DPL fund to that, and I believe was that part of what we had asked for, some CIP dollars to support that project. Hampton is part of the Rise Denver bond program and includes some renovation, but also an addition, which, as you know, is very needed there. I am not aware that we're having any financial worry at this point. We're looking at Gina. But I can't remember where we are in process with Hampton. In design, does anybody know? No?
Design.
We think it's in design, so it'll take a little bit of time.
Okay. Thank you. I think as the library, as with many of our other presentations that we've had, it's this need to be able to bundle, I think, because oftentimes they're seen as smaller projects. So in our design process, if it can be bundled or thought about in a broader
package, it would be great just to be able to get it across the finish line, because I know sometimes these are seen as smaller projects and therefore kind of float out there in the ether for a little bit.
About that, I think that one's a little harder because the RISE bond for the library gives us two new libraries, the one in Westwood, the one in Globeville, which we're working on, and the only renovation in that package was for Hampton. We'll see what we can do.
I appreciate that. Just in the conversation that we'd had and the meeting, and I just appreciate the update, can you speak a little bit to some of the additional services that are being provided online and also through
Absolutely. So through the DPL fund, we've been able to reduce wait times on our ebooks primarily through the Libby app, but also, as I said, to diversify and expand the collection, which is great, so people have access to more titles now. But yeah, we also have been able to add really popular and expensive resources online for our community through that fund. We now have the New York Times app available to any Denver Public Library cardholder. That's the daily news. You can get the recipe app. You can get the games app if you're into crosswords and Wordle archive and all of that. And we've been able to add a Spanish streaming movie platform and some research platforms that we just have never been able to provide the public before. So everything from entertainment to resources that really help our students in school across all ages.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have more questions, but I'll just send them on to Angela.
I appreciate that. So we are going to go a little bit over time because I want to make sure I get to Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for all you do for our city and for the people who live in it. Do you own your buildings?
No, the city owns all city property, including the libraries.
And HVAC also owned by the city?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Well, what are your questions?
The statement being the city should maintain city assets and should not rely on the library, a tenant, to be doing something that the city should be doing to its own assets.
Thank you so much, Councilman Hines. Really appreciate it. One question for you, and then I'll follow up with a slew of questions that I have for you. You mentioned the equity impacts, and to Councilman Gilmore's point about the library, I do want to make sure that, like, we are thinking about our deferred maintenance projects. I'm curious if you have any idea of the branches that will be impacted by these deficits. So are these branches in communities of color? Are these branches in low-income communities? Like, do you have any of that data that we might be able to digest?
So we're trying to mitigate service impacts in terms of hours reductions or anything like that. With the DPL fund, we were able to expand hours because we were able to add staff. And we added 7-day service at what we call community hubs. And that includes Green Valley Ranch, Hadley, Hampton, Gonzales, Blair Caldwell. So we thought about geographic diversity. We thought about the neighborhoods that really need library services significantly. And then we thought about our bigger locations, because if we can expand access to computers, books, etc., at our largest locations, that helps the whole community. So we keep all of that in mind, and we will continue to keep that in mind as we think about what hours look like and what staffing levels look like.
Do you know how much budgetarily you all are carrying year over year for deferred maintenance? So the examples that you've given us with HVAC or sewer, do you have a list of both the dollar amount but also the branches that they would apply to?
We do. We've been doing a lot of work in this space. Get back to you. We'll make sure to get back to you because I want to be accurate.
Sure. That's it. No, it doesn't look like anyone has any more questions, and so we really appreciate you. Oh, sorry, Councilor Torres.
I'll just mention, too, I went to the voters with a large proportion of anticipated use going to capital as well. So it is a blend, is what I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is an important message. The use is for both operating and for capital, and that gives us flexibility, but there is not enough money in that fund to take care of all the city-owned library properties, and there's also not enough money in that fund to deal with service expansions and personnel. So, like the city, we have to make hard decisions, and we understand the situation that all of us are in collectively with budgets right now.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. All right, with that, we're wrapped up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.